Are you white?
Yeah, full white. Jewish boy, full Jew.
You Jew?
Mom and dad, both, yeah.
Because normally
grandparents,
white,
all full Jew.
Yeah.
They did surveys, which is interesting. They did a lot of surveys, and for some bizarre reason, a lot of the men in porn were Jewish. Jamie Gillis, Mark Stevens, Randy West, Herschel Savage, me. I can go on and on.
Why is
and
that?
The women almost never are.
Why are the men so into it?
And so women are not. You see very few porn stars that are Jewish. The men, I don't know. I mean, they like to perform. I guess they like to be actors. You know, yeah. They did a lot of interesting surveys on that. It was hard to find.
And so, were you disowned by the Jewish people as a result of getting it?
There's a double standard in society. It's not good, but it exists. Where the father will tell his son, "Go get him. Make your dad proud." He's like a junior version of me. Look at that. The girls love him. Then they tell the girl, "Don't you dare!
Right?
Don't you let these guys chase you!" Like, you know, it's a whole different ballgame.
The adult industry was pretty much founded by the Jews. They gravitated towards the porn industry because it's like kind of the seedier cousin of the Hollywood industry, which had already been controlled by the Jews. And basically, they pretty much just took it over. The godfather of the modern day porn industry, his name is Reuben Sturman, who was actually an Orthodox Jew. He owned over 200 bookstores all around the country. He's actually my godfather. What the Jews did pretty much was they revolutionized the adult industry and made it their own. So there was no space for anti-Semitism, and they basically controlled everything. But back in the 80s, the only way you could get pornography was to go through someone like Reuben Sturman. And he controlled, you know, all of his stores and all the stores that that he didn't own. They had to pay him a tax to carry his product. Reuben Sturman, actually, eventually he died in prison. They tried to get him from obscenity back in the 80s, which was a big thing. It actually still is. There is an obscenity arrest today. He eventually died in prison because of tax evasion, because he didn't want to pay taxes. Back in the 70s, the majority of the male porn performers were Jewish. And the majority of the female performers were Roman Catholic. But all the business owners are pretty much Jewish or have Jewish ties or at some point worked for a Jew.
This is yet one more sequel to the serial of the Al Goldstein life. And I really want to point out how despicable and disgusting you are as a constituency. I give my very fucking best. When I eat pussy, when I lick asshole, I try to be a good hump. I try to give you the best writings and insight and insights into what makes Al Goldstein. Al Goldstein's a fucking legend. How many people legalize pornography? I mean, fucking Fishbein is coasting, and Ron Jeremy is coasting. I changed the law. My fucking arrest in Wichita, Kansas. I'm the one who's still convicted of showing pubic hair in 1971. Everyone else is carrion, is a parasite. I changed the fucking law. I mean, for that, I can always get high regard and high esteem for being a flesh pioneer. But you who read the blogs, you have no fucking life. You're fucking losers. You know, if you had a life, you'd want to comment on my writing. You'd want to have an exchange of views. But all you want to do is put me down or say I'm whining. Asshole, you don't mean anything. You're reading me. I'm not reading you. Do you think I give a shit what you have to say? All you are is a coagulated turd stuck up the ass of a camel. You don't matter. You don't mean anything. Don't answer. Who gives a shit? I don't get paid that much. I just sold an article to fucking Hustler for $2,100. I make money from other magazines. If you morons cannot appreciate my poetic genius, my insights, my James Joycean approach to life, my respect for Henry Miller and hedonism, what the fuck is wrong with you? Read graffiti on the walls of the bathrooms that are on the IRT subway. I'm not going to work with training you anymore. I've done it. I've earned my money with the column, but I've never dealt with less intelligence, less insight than you. You fucking pieces of shit. You can't respond to me. You don't have the brains. You're catatonic. You've been lobotomized. I may give you one or two more opportunities, but when you bring up Trotsky and rub yourself in shit, remember, you're not putting me down. You're putting you down. You are wasting the opportunity to deal with a fucking genius, because the limits aren't mine. The limit is you. You're limited, you're empty, you're vacuous, you're pathetic. I fuck you. And I'm probably going to fuck your wife and your daughters.
In past broadcasts, I've talked about the breakdown of law and order in Russia in the wake of communist rule. The communists, which is to say the Jews, sucked the country dry and then headed for greener pastures. At least most of them did. Some Jews stayed behind to squeeze still more blood out of the Russian people. In several broadcasts, we've looked at the trade in white sex slaves centered in Israel. Jewish organized crime gangs kidnap Russian and Ukrainian girls, or in some cases, lure them to Israel with the promise of employment as secretaries or housekeepers or nannies, and then force them to work as sex slaves in Jewish brothels. Other Jewish crime gangs in Russia exploit Russian children for the pedophile market around the world. I reported in my broadcast of October 7th, 2000, the breakup of a child pornography ring operating from Moscow and selling videos of Russian children, some of them only 2 or 3 years old, being raped, sexually tortured, and even murdered. There actually are perverts who obtain sexual gratification from viewing such horrors. And child pornography is big business. The child porn videos coming from Moscow sell for hundreds or even thousands of dollars to pedophiles in the West. The pornographers in Moscow obtain children from Russian orphanages by bribing corrupt administrators at the orphanages, or they simply kidnap them from public parks or playgrounds. My report of October 7, 2000 was based on the breakup of one child porn operation in Moscow after an investigation by Italian police and postal officials of the shipment of videos from Russia to pedophiles in Italy. In that report, I quoted from a Reuters news dispatch datelined Naples, Italy, September 27th. I'll read you again what I quoted in my report. Police said on Wednesday that they had arrested 8 Italians suspected of belonging to a child pornography ring that traded videos over the Internet, including films of Russian children who were abused to death. Police specializing in Internet crime told reporters that their 19-month investigation had given them enough information to begin investigations into 1,700 people suspected of buying the material over the web. They said 3 people in Moscow ran an operation to kidnap children from orphanages, circuses, and public parks and film them while they were forced to commit sexual acts. Police said they have intercepted some 3,000 tapes and CDs and digital video discs of child pornography, including some involving children only several months old. End of quote. These arrests were big news in Italy, where TV newsmen horrified millions of Italians by broadcasting excerpts from a couple of the child porn videos on a primetime national television news program. I reported that the newsmen responsible for the broadcast were immediately fired by the news director of the government-run network, Gad Lerner, a Jew, who obviously was very unhappy that the news had gotten out. Perverts in the United States also buy child porn videos from Russia, and I commented in my report of October 7, 2000, that in the United States there was practically a media blackout on the Italian investigation and the subsequent arrests in Italy and in Russia. But there was an Associated Press release on September 29th, 2 days after the arrests. I'll quote a few lines from that release. Police said they had broken up an online international child pornography ring, arrested 8 Italians and 3 Russians and seized thousands of videos and photographs. The Russian-run ring, which distributed an explicit catalog on the Internet, catered to clients in the United States, Germany, and Italy. Its inventory included films of children being tortured and killed. Investigators say the pornography ring produces and distributes images showing children as young as 2 years old being sexually abused. Some of the victims reportedly were stolen from orphanages, others from families. Its catalog offers films of killings for about $20,000 and images of people having sex with children for about half that. End quote. That Associated Press release from September 29, 2000 was virtually ignored by news media in the United States. Then on January 4th of last year, a man described by federal authorities as the U.S. West Coast distributor for a child pornography ring operating in Moscow was arrested in Walnut Creek, California. That was Seth Beckenstein, a Jew. And at the time I thought, at last, now the media cannot avoid reporting this filthy business to the American people. There will be a hearing and a trial for Beckenstein, and the whole story will come out. But, of course, the story didn't come out. The mass media did avoid reporting anything about Beckenstein's arrest or his trial. Even the big newspapers in California were silent. The American public remained completely ignorant of the whole business. Do you understand what Beckenstein was doing? He was selling films to thousands of American perverts that showed Russian children and infants being raped, sexually tortured, and murdered. He was a part of the operation that kidnapped, raped, sexually tortured, and murdered these Russian children. Without people like Beckenstein to sell the films, the business couldn't have operated. He was placing wholesale orders to Moscow for more films, new films, and wiring the money that kept the operation going. He was as guilty as the people who actually did the kidnapping, raping, torture, and murder. Well, last month, on January 4th, exactly a year after his arrest, Seth Beckenstein, who has been out of jail on bond the whole time, was sentenced to 18 months imprisonment after pleading guilty. That's just 18 months for being a major part of an operation involving the most horrific criminal activity imaginable. 18 months for raping, torturing, and murdering hundreds of white children for the gratification of unspeakably perverted freaks. And there still hasn't been a peep about Beckenstein or the child pornography operation in which he was engaged in any major media outlets in the United States. So far as the TV-watching public is concerned, it never happened. Imagine how differently the Beckenstein case would have been handled by the courts if the Jews had decided that it served their interests to make a cause célèbre of it. Imagine what would have happened to Beckenstein if the Jewish media had given him the 1998 Jasper, Texas treatment. Gruesome excerpts from the films he was peddling would be shown on primetime TV in America night after night. TV crews would have interviewed some of Beckenstein's customers and had them tell everyone how much they enjoyed seeing little girls or little boys sexually tortured. There would have been tearful interviews with the Russian parents of some of the kidnapped children. The Jews would have kept this up week after week and month after month until the lemmings all across America finally had gotten it and were screaming for Beckenstein's blood. And behold, the federal prosecutor would have seen the light and realized that Beckenstein had not only violated a law against sending child porn through the mail, he also was guilty of kidnapping, rape, and murder. And the judge would have seen the light, too. And Beckenstein would be sitting on death row now hoping that the other inmates didn't get their hands on him before he got his lethal injection. But the Jewish media bosses had no interest in punishing their fellow tribesmen for his exploitation of Russian children. After all, the children were only Gentiles, only Goyim, and their fellow tribesmen in Israel were making a very good living in the sex slave trade, exploiting the older sisters of these Russian children. Why stir things up? And they didn't even have to tell the prosecutors and the judge in the Beckenstein case to take it easy on Seth. The court system already has become so corrupted in America that the prosecutor and the judge understood without being told that they shouldn't be too hard on Beckenstein. And now this depraved monster will be back in business again in a few months. I'll sum it up for you. Our whole system of laws and government in America has become media-driven. Until we drag the filthy creatures controlling the mass media of news and entertainment out of their offices and drive stakes through their hearts, the system will only become more and more corrupt. Thanks for being with me again today.
Pornography is an insidious and damaging influence on Western society. It is something that eats away at the fabric of society and helps normalize degeneracy, promiscuity, and of course glorifies interracial sexual relationships. At its core, pornography, like many of the attacks on Western society, is squarely aimed at undermining the family unit. It is aimed at pushing a narrative of promiscuity and popularizing unnatural, unloving, and often violent sex, which is the opposite of the kind of sex that would take place between loving couples. I wrote about this extensively in my book, The Fall of Western Man, which you can download for free from my website, www.thefallofwesternman.com. All the links are in the description below. Out of all the vices foisted upon the West by our enemies, pornography is often a remarkably easy vice to push, because sex is something we all enjoy. The fact that sex feels good and is so enjoyable is of course an evolutionary advantage. The survival of any organism depends on its ability to reproduce, and if the act of copulation was painful, disgusting or undesirable, that would be a major evolutionary flaw, as the organism in question would be less likely to reproduce. By playing on this natural drive and appealing to our desire for pleasure, those running the porn industry have had an easy time selling their subversive filth to the Western world. After all, they are appealing to us with something we naturally desire. But crucially, control over our natural desires and wants is part of what makes us developed human beings. If we simply did what made us feel good and pursued endless pleasure like debased cattle, we would simply eat, drink, have sex, and seek other pleasures at the expense of all else, which of course would be very dangerous, as it would take us from being moral, upstanding individuals who are part of a cohesive community to being nothing more than pleasure-seeking beasts that would only think of our next pleasure-filled high. And the reason Western man developed as we did, the reason we achieved so much, the reason we built such a magnificent civilization, is that we learned that forgoing instant gratification in order to work towards something greater and focus on long-term goals was important. This is something that can clearly be seen in the formation of lasting partnerships and marriage. By staying faithful to one partner and by engaging in meaningful and loving sexual encounters with that one person, our ancestors created lasting bonds with their partner, all of which ensured that they would be more likely to see their offspring survive and thrive. Obviously, we have always had the urge for sexual gratification, but tens of thousands of years ago, when our ancestors lived on the edge of ice sheets, the harsh winters and difficult conditions in Western man's northern homelands meant that those who abandoned their partners were unlikely to see their offspring survive. The Western male and female had to work together in order to protect and nurture their children and ensure the survival of those children. Those who gave in to their primitive drives and pursued sex with many different partners, choosing to abandon their partners and children, rapidly saw their bloodlines die out. Those who stuck with one partner and controlled their urges, confining themselves to sexual activity with that partner, saw their offspring grow to maturity, as they were there to protect and nurture their offspring as part of a two-parent family. This was the beginning of the trend toward monogamy and lasting life partnerships. And that monogamy and those lifelong partnerships developed, and it became clear when children were brought up in a loving two-parent family and grew up experiencing both the conscience and love of a good mother and the discipline and strength of a hard-working father, those children were more likely to grow up to be balanced and productive members of their community. As such, the nuclear family went from simply being an evolutionary advantage that drastically increased the chances of survival of the next generation to being the very cornerstone of Western society. So what better way to attack a society and the civilization that sprang forth from that society than to undermine the family, to chip away at the family-orientated moral values of that society? This attack on the family is again a drive to separate man from woman and break the loving bonds that exist between the two. And what better way to attack the loving bond between man and woman than to push hedonistic desires that promote promiscuity, multiple partners, and tempt those in relationships into believing that they are in some way missing out by staying faithful to just one person? And that's exactly what pornography promotes. And repeated viewing slowly changes the way the viewer thinks, causing the individual to regress to being a more instinctual and pleasure-driven creature. Someone who slowly loses their control over their ability to rein in their desires, becoming less developed and more animalistic. This is not simply my assertion either. Scientific studies have shown that repeated viewing of pornography actually alters the way the brain works. Neuroscience has shown us that willpower is a function of the prefrontal lobes of the brain, and studies have shown that viewing porn over and over again actually reshapes those areas of the brain, having the effect of literally eroding our willpower and our moral compass. Neuroscientists call it hypofrontality, which is explained as a state in which there is decreased blood flow to the prefrontal lobes of the brain. Crucially, hypofrontality is observed in schizophrenia patients and is also observed in all manner of addictions. And using the term addict is apt here, as porn is highly addictive. And as with all addictions, over time, higher doses are needed to satisfy the addiction. The Porn Circuit, a book by Sam Black, explains what hypofrontality is for the porn viewer. And I quote, "Compulsiveness is a good descriptor of hypofrontality. Many porn users feel focused on getting to porn and masturbating, even when a big part of them is saying, 'Don't do this.' Even when negative consequences seem imminent, impulse control is too weak to battle the cravings." End quote. The porn-addicted brain has trouble thinking logically. When impulses and desires come from the midbrain, instead of being moderated, the brain feels these desires as compelling needs. The prefrontal region is supposed to be able to weigh consequences and situations and judiciously shut down cravings. But hypofrontality means the addict's ability to do this is impaired. In other words, repeated viewing of porn ensures that individuals are less able to control their desires and more likely to give in to carnal cravings, despite the fact that those actions may undermine their sexual health or put at risk relationships they are already engaged in. There are two key defining factors of pornography that specifically attack the idea of a loving and monogamous relationship. The first is the promiscuous nature of porn. Pornography is simply sex for the sake of sex, pure carnal desires being fulfilled in a soulless and often degrading and debased manner. Pornography does not have a conscience for monogamy. It is by its very nature promiscuous, and the more partners, and often the more people that are involved in the sex act, the better. Both male and female performers have dozens, if not hundreds, of sexual partners over their career. This sexual variety is then seen as desirable by those who watch pornography. The idea that it is desirable to have one sexual partner who satisfies the every need of their lover is jettisoned for the notion that satisfaction comes from many different partners who all fulfill a different need and perform a different sexual role. Secondly, the sex acts carried out in pornographic films are not natural and loving sex acts between monogamous partners, but are often brutal and unnatural. The women employed by the porn industry are more often than not extremely beautiful, and the acts they partake in are extremely degrading, humiliating, and in many cases unnatural. Pornography is not just an attack on the foundation of the loving relationship, but it is a way in which the enemies of the West can revel in the degradation, objectification, and humiliation of beautiful Western females. And this is something I will come back to later. It is important to remember that sex evolved to be a loving act, not an act of violence or degradation. Yet in pornography, sex is more often than not degrading and violent. Women are dragged around, sodomized, and degraded in a way that would not make a female feel loved, but instead make her feel used and worthless. Often, more than just two people are involved in these acts, making these sex acts the very opposite of a loving embrace. The effect of this is for men to see women not as loving partners and sex not as a loving act, but to see women as objects to degrade and humiliate, and for sex to be violent and debased. These two key influences are the polar opposite of what builds a stable and loving relationship, and exposure to these influences, mixed with the mental issue of hypofrontality, means that those watching porn are less likely to form long-lasting relationships and would be more prone to cheat on a partner. And the consequence of that is, of course, the destruction of the family unit. But who is running the porn industry? Who is behind the pushing of this filth? Now, I'm not going to claim that all Jews are involved in this, nor am I going to claim that Jews are the only ones behind pornography. And it is clear that plenty of Europeans are also involved in the porn industry. I am sure there are also Jews who are opposed to this industry. However, bearing those caveats in mind, it is important to note that Jews do play a disproportionate role in the porn industry. The following is taken from an essay called Triple X Phoenix, Jews in the American Porn Industry. And yes, I did pronounce that correctly. X Phoenix is a play on the word ethnic and X-rated. This was written by one Dr. Nathan Abrams, perhaps the world's most renowned authority on the Jewish role in pornography, and it was published in the Jewish Quarterly. And I quote, "A story little told is that of Jews in Hollywood's seedier cousin, the adult film industry. Perhaps we'd prefer to pretend the triple X-phoenix didn't exist. But there's no getting away from the fact that secular Jews have played, and still continue to play, a disproportionate role throughout the adult film industry in America. Jewish involvement in pornography has had a long history in the United States, as Jews have helped to transform a fringe subculture into what has become a primary constituent of Americana. These are the true blue Jews." End quote. Now, the part of that I have to focus on is the line, "Jews have helped to transform a fringe subculture into what has become a primary constituent of Americana." What a troubling statement. Why would anyone wish to embed such filth into the American lifestyle? But this isn't the first time I have seen such comments from Jewish sources. An illuminating headline from Haaretz reads, and I quote, "Dirty Jews and the Christian Right. Brilliant actors like Larry David and Sarah Silverman are challenging America's powerful religious, family-friendly culture and asserting their Jewishness by glorifying obscenity." End quote. I find this quote rather disturbing. Why on earth would anyone glorify obscenity? Or worse still, attack family-friendly culture? When you attack something, you are meant to attack something that is a negative. For example, you attack drug culture, child poverty, or criminality. Why on earth would anyone attack family-friendly culture, which is of course a positive? And what's more, why would anyone go on to praise those who carry out these attacks? Dr. Nathan Abrams goes on to conclude his piece on the Jewish role in the porn industry by stating, and I quote, "This brief overview and analysis of the role and motivation behind pornographers and performers is intended to shed light on a neglected topic in American Jewish popular culture. In light of the relatively tolerant Jewish view of sex, why are we ashamed of the Jewish role in the porn industry? We might not like it, but the Jewish role in this field has been significant, and it's about time it was written about seriously." End quote. So with prominent Jewish figures and publications openly praising attacks on family-friendly culture and admitting to Jews playing a disproportionate role in the porn industry, let's take a brief look at some of those leading Jewish figures and their role in popularizing pornography and making it mainstream. And sadly, it is now mainstream, with the world porn industry now worth over $100 billion a year. So where to start? Let's begin with the man dubbed the Walt Disney of porn, Reuben Sturman, the most notorious pornographer in the post-war era. By the late 1960s, Sturman was the biggest distributor of adult magazines in the US. According to the US Department of Justice, throughout the 1970s, Sturman controlled most of the pornography circulating in the country. It was said that Sturman did not simply control the adult entertainment industry, he was the industry. Another so-called pioneer pornographer was the publisher of Screw magazine, Al Goldstein. Goldstein eagerly described his motivations for being in porn, and I quote, "The only reason that Jews are in pornography is that we think that Christ sucks. Catholicism sucks. We don't believe in authoritarianism. Pornography thus becomes a way of defiling Christian culture, and as it penetrates to the very heart of the American mainstream, becomes more charged." Goldstein continued, "I believe in me. I'm God. F God. God is your need to believe in some super being. I am the super being. I am your God. Admit it." End quote. Seth Warshavsky is credited with being the pioneer of the internet pornography industry. He is the founder of Internet Entertainment Group. During the dot-com boom of the late 90s, Warshavsky welcomed media attention, which made him the face of the online pornography industry. Stephen Hirsch is the founder and co-chairman of the adult entertainment company Vivid Entertainment, which is estimated to be the top adult entertainment company in the whole world. Paul Fishbein, Irv Silfkin, and Barry Rosenblatt founded Adult Video News in 1983, also called AVN or AVN Magazine. AVN is an American trade journal that covers the adult video industry. The New York Times noted that AVN is to pornographic films what Billboard is to records. AVN sponsors an annual convention called the Adult Entertainment Expo in Las Vegas, along along with an annual award show for the adult industry modelled after the Oscars. And there are many others. John Stagliano, who owns Evil Angel Studio. Phil Harvey of the Adam and Eve conglomerate. Winston Wolfe of XRCO Pornography. David Freeman, founder of the Adult Film Association of America. Gary Creeman of Sex.com. William Margold of the misleadingly named Free Speech Coalition, as well as the X-Rated Critics Organization and Fans of X-Rated Entertainment, and Bruce J. Friedman of Swank Magazine. This is, of course, not an exhaustive list, but it does cover the tip of the iceberg, and you are welcome to carry out further research of your own. Whilst we have covered the leading producers, owners, and pioneers in the industry, there have also been many notable Jewish performers too. One such performer, James Dean, was recently interviewed by Haaretz, and when asked, "Do you happen to have any Jewish role models or figures in the industry?" he replied, and I quote, "I don't go into a place and think, I'm Jewish. Who else is Jewish? I need to work with them." Respect goes universally across all races, creeds, colours, religions, everything. The Jews know we're better than everyone else. That's all that matters. It's true. We're the chosen people. It's a fact. End quote. This telling quote about Jewish supremacy dovetails with the earlier quote from Al Goldstein, who proudly claimed, "Christ sucks," and attacked Catholicism. Goldstein's hatred for Catholics and Christian family values isn't just an isolated case. It is something that was also dealt with in Dr. Nathan Abrahams' essay, in which he concluded that many Jews have a grudge against Christianity and WASP culture, WASP standing for White Anglo-Saxon Protestants. And I quote, "Porn is the result of an atavistic hatred of Christian authority. They are trying to weaken the dominant culture in America by moral subversion." End quote. So it becomes clear that Jewish involvement in the porn industry isn't simply driven by the desire for financial gain. Of course, financial gain was certainly a major incentive, but there seems to be other ideological reasons as well. Dr. Abrahams goes on to state, and I quote, "Pornography thus becomes a way of defiling Christian culture, and, as it penetrates to the very heart of the American mainstream, and is no doubt consumed by those very same WASPs, its subversive character becomes more charged. Extending the subversive thesis, Jewish involvement in the X-rated industry can be seen as a proverbial two fingers to the entire WASP establishment in America." End quote. This assertion is backed up by E. Michael Jones in the magazine Culture Wars, May 2003, where he interviewed a porn industry insider. And I quote, "The leading male performers through the 1980s came from secular Jewish upbringings, and the females from Roman Catholic day schools. The standard porn scenario became, as a result, a Jewish fantasy of shtupping the Catholic shiksa," shiksa being a derogatory term for a non-Jewish female. End quote. Dr. Abrahams and others who have written on the subject seem to agree that Jewish involvement in the porn industry was driven by an underlying hatred of white Christian society, and even out of a feeling of superiority and fantasy of degrading Western females. Both of these assertions are backed up by quotes from Jewish producers and stars from within the industry. But that takes us back to something I mentioned earlier. I stated that porn is a way in which the enemies of the West can revel in the degradation, objectification, and humiliation of beautiful Western females. And that is the final core component of porn. In many cases, pornography is anti-white hatred. It depicts beautiful, young, and often angelic-looking white females being violently sexually abused. There is no doubt in my mind that those who push this filth get some sick satisfaction from watching beautiful Western females being degraded and humiliated in violent sexual acts in which they are treated like nothing more than pieces of meat. The females who star in these films are unloved, unvalued, and ultimately are portrayed as nothing more than soulless sexual objects. And this can be seen at its most extreme on a site called Blacked. Blacked is owned by Greg Lansky, a French Jew who also owns the sites Tushy and Vixen Adult Studios. Blacked is a site where white girls, described as nubiles because of their young, fresh-faced and teen-looking appearance, engage in sexual acts with one or more black partners. Because what better way to attack white society and morality than to show fresh-faced young European girls being sexually dominated and sodomized by African males? And just like with everything that has been pushed as an attack on the West, not only is porn addictive, but it also represents a slippery slope. As a drug addict becomes more used to a drug, smaller and less potent doses have less of an effect over time, causing the addict to seek out larger doses or stronger stimulants. And the same happens to the porn addict. Over time, softer and more restrained images and scenes have less of an effect, and the addict seeks out material that pushes the envelope of degeneracy even further. This overexposure to sexual material drives perversion, and sick fetishes emerge, further warping the mind of those who indulge in such material. But the problem with porn is that everyone now indulges in this, whether they wish to or not, as we are now surrounded by pornography and sexually explicit material. Pornography is no longer restricted to dirty backstreet stores and sweaty truck stops. Sadly, pornography is now part of the mainstream. So-called porn stars are now seen as celebrities and held up as twisted role models, and what would once have been seen as sexually explicit material is now shown on primetime television. At one time, teenage boys passed around tattered magazines with pictures of attractive, semi-naked young ladies in them. Now, these teens sit watching hardcore movies featuring sadism, masochism, sodomy, and a range of other debased acts, all streamed directly to their computers, tablets, and smartphones. But just not in Israel, where internet service providers block all porn unless people ask to view it. I take this from The Independent, and I quote, "The Israeli Ministerial Committee for Legislation unanimously approved the bill, which forces internet companies in the country to censor adult websites by default. Backers of the new legislation claim that it is a way of stopping young people getting online. Backers of the bill said that the system would still allow people to see all the information they wanted to, but would keep children safe at the same time." End quote. The chief sponsor of the law, Moalem Rafeli, said, and I quote, "The damaging influence of watching and addiction to pornographic and severe violence has been proven in many studies, with great harm to children. Today, it is easier for a child to consume harsh content on the internet than to buy an ice cream at the local kiosk." End quote. So whilst Jews in the West have been disproportionately involved in the porn industry, in the ethno-state of Israel, the filth that is so readily available to everyone in Europe and North America with an internet connection is blocked by service providers in order to protect children and shield people from the negative effects of viewing such material. This all seems rather hypocritical. While certain Jews in the West seem to revel in the negative effects of porn on the Western family unit and on Western morality, in Israel, there is a powerful movement toward family values and protecting those values from damaging and degrading material. Make no mistake, porn is an assault on the West, something that undermines the cornerstone of our society, the family unit. It does so by playing on our natural sexual desires, by twisting those desires and literally warping our minds and altering the way our brains work. Porn seeks to turn sex from a natural, loving and monogamous act between two committed partners into something violent and debauched, and increases our cravings for numerous partners and leads to people seeking a promiscuous lifestyle that isn't conducive to forming lasting bonds or raising children properly. Those who push porn are not doing so because it enriches us or liberates us. They are also not simply doing so for financial gain, but they are pushing this damaging material because they have a deep-seated resentment toward us and our society. And crucially, they are doing it because porn is an attack on our family-friendly and moral culture. But there is an antidote to porn and the sexualization that surrounds us. And again, it is traditionalism and the moral values that stood us in good stead for thousands of years. We must embrace the family, and with it, the family values that helped build our great and illustrious civilization. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the message by liking and sharing it on social networks. If you want to hear more from me, please hit the subscribe button, as new videos are posted every week. You can also read my book, The Fall of Western Man. It's available as a free ebook and in both hardback and paperback, and all the links are in the description below. Finally, if you want to join in the discussion with me, feel free to add me on Facebook, and you can now follow me on Twitter as well. Everyone's welcome.